Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Tim Jenkins.
I've got people real mad at me in Chicago that how dare you? There's a radio guy up there, Mike North. He was real mad.
Founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite.
I'm Tim Jenkins and welcome to All Things QB, where I watch every single clip and break down the most important ones today.
Breaking down the positives and negatives.
You've seen progressions that align with the quarterback's eye. I hope that's what we get more of, but I hope we continue to see some of these concepts and the way we build things are better for the quarterback versus just looks good on paper.
Tim Jenkins with Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
Let's jump into the film.
And we do so with Tim Jenkins, founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite. He works with quarterbacks. He can work with you at T Jenkins Elite on X. And he joins us via the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Tim, I feel like we're talking to you in a case where it's a little bit better today than it was on Tuesday of last week when it came to Caleb Williams' play. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit better for Caleb Williams. Unfortunately, this is why in the NFL you got to win the ones that you can at home, right? We let the Vikings one slip away, and then you go on the road in a what everybody knew was going to be a crazy environment. Right. And then you kind of you feel better about Caleb's performance. Right. Hey, his eyes were in a better spot. It felt like his feet were tied to his progression more. And then at the end of the day, it was like we got, you know, the doors blown off us. So to me, it's like now we're 0-2. You know, you hate being like, oh, hey, what we should be. But in reality, they should be 1-1 if they just finished the job at home on Monday night. Now you're sitting at 0-2. And you guys know how, you know, you start feeling like, OK, hey, we got to get rolling here soon. So that when things do start clicking on offense, we can make a run at the playoffs.
Tim, tell me what you think about Caleb Williams' performance in comparison to what we saw in week one, because I believe he played better.
Yeah, I think if you were to grade him out, and I know there's a lot of stuff floating around on Twitter, I'm going to say tongue-in-cheek about grades, but the what I'll tell you is if you were to grade him out, I think he played a lot better this week from his feet were tied to his progression. So it wasn't like you saw him running his feet and he wasn't like he was rereading a concept. He was there. He was consistently, hey, working whatever his progression is on the play, right? 1 to 2 to 3. It felt like he was tied together there. Honestly, it felt like, and we kind of joked about it last time I came on, it felt like Ben Johnson circled back to some of the scripted calls, right? We called dig with a home run post 3 times. Now we dressed it up out of a different formation, but it felt like we were kind of going back to some of those scripted plays, which then led to him probably playing with more confidence and him being great with the football. Obviously, we have the 2 mistakes. One gets negated from the roughing where we just really can't have, right? Just like putting the ball in harm's way for no reason. But I do think from just playing within the structure of the offense, I thought it was better. It felt like we had less pre-snap penalties. We still had some, but it felt like we had less, which is hilarious that we go on the road and we have less pre-snap penalties. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's hard because I do think in the NFL, you get into these games where you get to 2 or 3 possession ball games. And it's like, yes, I think his eyes were in a better spot. I think his feet were calmer. Simultaneously, like, I'd be lying if I thought that we were getting exotic looks or if we were getting anything but shell coverage where it's like, you know, hey, let him hit this and then we'll go make a tackle because, again, they're playing to win a game. They don't play because they want to keep your box score to look terrible, right? So to me, it's like that's what I think is maybe tougher for me where it's like I'm not as optimistic as maybe I would be if this was a 7 or point ball game where you're like, oh, man, you know, we felt like we were still getting pressure looks. We felt like we were still getting things dialed up. You know, I'd be lying if I said it felt like that down the stretch from what we were getting defensively. With that being said, like Caleb can only play against what he's got, what he's going against. And I do think he looked cleaner overall working through these progressions.
I want to ask you about the eyes. You brought that up and Ben Johnson did say that the eyes are not always in the right place. And that doesn't mean it's not better relative to last week. But Tim, what does that mean exactly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to give you the PhD answer. What I'm going to give you is something to look for. When you watch NFL quarterbacks play, something that's really the way that you would know that someone doesn't understand what's going on in this play is if he does what's called rereading something, meaning if you see a quarterback go from, like, let's say he's looking at DJ Moore off to his right, and then he scans more middle to Kmet, and then you see him look back out to the right to DJ Moore, that's called rereading a concept. If somebody's rereading a concept, that means they're not sure where their eyes were to be or supposed to be, so they're just, like, essentially scanning to see who's open, right? They're playing Madden, which, as you guys know, is not realistic when the bullets are flying, the ball's got to be out in 3 seconds, right? We've got to work our progression the way it's supposed to. So that's, like, one way that you can kind of see it on TV, actually, of, oh, this guy's comfortable, or, oh, you know, hey, you know, we still have progress to make. In terms of, like, what Ben's saying, I'm assuming Ben's talking more like higher level of, you know, two shell, three shell. And a really quick, easy way is, you know, two shell means, hey, we got two guys back deep, right? Usually safeties. You know, three shell or single high coverage means you really have one safety back. Usually two corners is how you get to your three shell, but just one guy back could also be a single high. We have a lot of plays where it's a two shell, three shell, meaning, hey, we want you to look to this side against two shell, right? The two guys deep. Or if it's single high, we want you to work to this other side. That's what I would guess where Ben's like, hey, we had this play designed. They gave us a disguise coverage. He didn't get his eyes to the right spot. He got his eyes to what they were disguising, right? They were showing two, they snapped to one or three. And that's probably more what Ben's talking about. And that's what you can kind of see on the tape a little bit of, you know, you get an exotic pressure. It feels like maybe he gets back into that reread, back into that scanning type play. But I tell you, a lot of the stuff where it was like a called shot play, I felt like his eyes were a heck of a lot better this week than they were last week.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
We are talking to Tim Jenkins. He of Tim Jenkins Elite. He reviews film. His breakdown of the Bears is out on YouTube right now. You can check that out. And he's on Twitch with us, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score, and Rahimi Harris and Grody. And Tim, not to go back to last week, but I do want to, because of something that you talked about on Twitter with Ryan Fitzpatrick when you guys were going back and forth discussing the open DJ Moore's open on the left side against Minnesota. Could have been a touchdown. Caleb Williams did address it midweek. He did talk about how there was an adjustment there. I think DJ probably saw something where he knew he could be open, and that's what you're going to do, try to score. What was your takeaway from that play and just you two discussing it as well? Because I think you had different opinions.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that were like, hey, it's a virtually impossible throw, right, with somebody changing it. If I'm being honest, I just disagree. I would point to a play this week of what Caleb did, the Rome double move, right? So you've got a double move where the corner grabs him, and what does Caleb do? Does he try to throw a perfect ball, or does he throw what we would call like a body-up shot, meaning like, hey, we won with scheme, basically, right? Let me just make sure I don't miss this. That's exactly what he throws. And I would make the argument, like, and this is just my perspective. Listen, I didn't have the career Fitz did, but just from coaching guys, what I could tell you is I think it's a heck of a lot harder to body up a throw where a defender makes contact so much that we get a flag on a double move than it is when we have a clean release. I think ultimately, and I think if you were really to get Caleb one-on-one and not in like a media environment and say, hey, obviously, we just need to body that throw up, meaning don't try to make the perfect throw to the pylon. You know, hold him up. Even if he gets tackled short, he gets tackled short. And that's what I come down on it. I mean, obviously, it's harder knowing the context of the fact that, hey, they had mirrored bench coming and, you know, DJ converts it to a go. Of course, that's harder. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, you know, we have guys adjust routes based on broken coverages all day, every day across the National Football League. And we have quarterbacks making body up throws. Like, here's where I think this argument is tough for me. Nobody And I don't know, maybe you guys would tell me, hey, I'm wrong. I don't think any of us four would tell you that we think Caleb Williams will either be like, he's not going to fail as an NFL quarterback because of lack of gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
Nobody's sitting here saying, I just don't even know if physically he can get it done. So we've agreed that he can rip the ball and do things with a football that there's not a lot of people that can do it.
And
then we can't then say, oh my gosh, the level of difficulty on that throw. Like, dude, that's the point. Like, that's the difference between a Caleb Williams or, you know, like a guy who grinds it out 14 years in the league, but, you know, isn't a first overall pick. That's the difference. Like, we took him number one because he can make insane throws. We can't then say, hey, we had DJ Moore wide open, but that's a really tough throw. Like, you got me under center? Sure. Call it a tough throw because I wouldn't have made it.
Right.
But like when you take these guys number one overall and we all agree he's got traits that are not common, we then have to expect throws like that to be able to be bodied up down the field because guess what? He'll go sprint to his right and throw it 48 yards on a dime. And like that's what he can do. So to me, it's like that's where I think the whole discussion kind of got blown out of context. And I get it. Like, you know, like right now it's like popular to be on one side of it. I don't think we know remotely what Caleb's going to be in this offense yet. Cause I just don't even think he's operating this offense yet. And that's okay. But to me, we still have to be able to say like, hey, I'm not going to say Caleb's the greatest ever. I'm not going to say he's a bust. I'm just going to evaluate the tape. Simultaneously, that's a throw that he's very capable of making. And I think like he would say that. And Ben Johnson sitting in the meeting room behind closed doors saying that. So to me, that's where I think that whole conversation, not with me and Ryan, but like everyone, I just think it got crazy.
Oh, and everybody has an opinion. If you get out there in those Twitter streets, if you will, or social media in general, I'm looking at what he's been able to do. And I know every week it's like we're revealing a little bit more of the puzzle and we're trying to solve the puzzle, right? You got another puzzle piece last week. Looking at that and knowing how Ben Johnson's offense looked in Detroit, and I know this is different because he's got different personnel, but do you feel like Caleb Williams took a step forward in that sense in terms of Ben Johnson's been a guy who says he's got to come to me? And I'm like, well, you got to tailor this thing around him too.
Yeah, I think operationally, I think Caleb probably took a step operationally. I'm guessing they were way cleaner with timing of motions and everything like that. It just looked more sound operationally. And I tell you that I think Ben kind of did come to him talking about, you know, hey, reloading some of those scripted calls.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, and this is, and you know, people are going to take this and run with it one way or another. The amount of times we got back to a scripted call, and again, we dressed it up differently, but it was the same concept, is very unusual.
Oh.
Like, that does not happen in the NFL in terms of, like, very rare. We saw, I think, the same play called three, maybe four times with that dig in the shot post.
Hmm.
You know, doing Denver, doing Miami, doing all these other teams, that is rare. Like, we do not see reloaded plays that often. You know, like, we were borderlining on where I would start to worry, and I'm coaching third grade tackle right now. You know what I mean? Like, I'm starting to think the kids are recognizing it. So I do think he was adjusting to kind of meet Caleb there of saying, hey, I know we've got all these shifts, we've got all these motions, we're running these out, all these different formations. Let me, you know, try to reload some of these concepts for you. So I think he did that. And I think Caleb probably took a step in the right direction. Ultimately, like, to me, the things that I walked away were he had a couple of misses where it was just like, man, we just can't miss this. This is a rhythm throw. Like, he's open. We got to take that. And then just the two decisions where, it more or less felt like he was being, you know, like, this is like a quarterback room, but like, it was almost like, hey, we were being disrespectful with like our, you know, reverence for the football. Like, we have to take care of the football. And the two INTs were kind of more or less just like lazy. And I think that's easy to clean up, you know, once you have those discussions.
You're listening to the Raheemy Harris and Grody Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. We're talking to our QB expert, Tim Jenkins. I want to follow up on that because you're right, Tim. People are going to take that, what you just said, and run with it. So I think I'm going to ask you the question that a lot of people are going to be asking when you say that they reloaded some of the concepts and how rare it is to twice do scripted plays. Why are they needing to do that for Caleb Williams? Does that mean that he's not getting the rest of what Ben Johnson is laying down?
Like, you know, and again, here we go.
That's why I want to nip this in the bud right now, Tim. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, I mean, and it's fine. I just, if I'm being honest, I don't think there's another way to interpret it, right? Yeah. Like, if you're reloading a play that we repped a bunch because it's scripted, there's no other way to interpret it other than, hey, we're not putting in a full, you know, 90-play game plan, right? We're going to put in 60. With that being said, is that like ultra concerning for me in week two? No. Yeah. And it's just because of the context of Caleb Williams. Like, you've got to think about this from like zoom out, big picture. There is no shot his youth football coach was coaching him. Caleb was just probably the best kid out there, running and throwing. Then in high school, he was, oh, I'm just going to ride this dude to a state. Right? Like, you guys know what it's like coming up in football for these generational guys. Like, and then, like, you know, again, I'm not trying to take a shot at Lincoln, but like, it's not the most complex thing in the world pre-snap, right? Because they're going fast. They're prioritizing going fast over winning with a shift in emotion. Then you get to the NFL and your rookie year was really a wash. Just like, you potentially played for an offensive coordinator that I don't know if this ever been confirmed, but doesn't script. Like, that's insane. We got to throw that out. So it's like the first time you've been asked to do this. And that's a lot. Like, it's a lot just to spit out the verbiage and then to handle everything and then have your eyes in the right spot on a PSL, two shell, three shell. Like, I know it's not popular because he gets paid so much money and he got taken number one overall to say, hey, we got to have patience, but like, it is what it is. So that's why I'm not concerned yet. If we're in week eight reloading, I'd start to say like, dang, that's concerning because we're not picking it up right at all. I'm just not concerned with it week two. And I think to me, it's like the coach has obviously decided, hey, this guy is, you know, let's just make sure his eyes are in the right spot. And like, listen, I tell you, we ran that play a bunch. The safety started to jump the dig route and he fitted in there. Right. And that's the piece of this that we're talking about of why you took him number one overall. Right. Like, you get a guy like me under center. Shoot, you better run 90 plays because the ball ain't going to get there fast. Right. So it's like the guy better be open. Caleb, you can reload stuff, and guess what? He's going to fit it in there. That, to me, is kind of more reconfirming of why you took him where you took him, and then now it's about developing him into who he should be. I don't want to go on too long, but I, like, have one comparison. It's like almost like Cam Newton. Like, watching Cam Newton's evolution, it was like he never got asked to play quarterback until he got to New England, and by then it was too late. But if we do this correctly and we develop Caleb as a quarterback with all these gifts, by the time that his quote unquote skill set starts to decrease, his mental aptitude will be so high that he will then have sustained success for the long term in Chicago versus like, hey, we had a great run with 4 years for him. And then like his gifts started to fade. So then, you know, hey, we couldn't overcome it. That's the point of developing these guys. So you don't have, you know, a Cam at the back half of his career. And that's what I think, like, we got to have the patience for, but I also get, like, it's the NFL, we're 0-2, like, we got to win some football games.
Tim, I'm glad you did expand on that. That's exactly what we're looking for. So don't ever be afraid to go off.
I appreciate that. Yeah. Sometimes though, my wife tells me you gotta, you know, kind of calm down. You know, you're kind of holding court at the dinner table too much.
You know what? The Jenkins family is a well-oiled machine. I'm not here to mess up that flow, but here, no, we want that stuff. So thank you for doing it.
Well, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. That was Tim Jenkins, founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite. If you want more, check out his YouTube video. It came out last night. I got about a quarter of the way through it, but I had to listen to Ben Johnson. I was watching the Pirates and Cubs game. There was a lot happening.
That was good. Great. That stuff on Caleb was pretty amazing. By the way, Robbie, send over some dinner to the Jenkins family.
That's a large family.
Set them up. Yeah, set them up. Just send it right on over.
Eats, right?
You got that? Thank you.
Boneless buffalo wings for the kids.
It's all the way to college.
He's getting some Klonopin as well.
That was Tim Jenkins. Coming up next on Rahimi and Harrison Grody, we have to talk about the massive conflict of interest in the NFL, where I'm pretty sure if it's anybody else, It doesn't happen. You're listening to the Raheem Harris and Mark Grody Show on 670 The Score in the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 530 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.